And now it's time for Uncle Ed's Magnificent Time Machine.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings as time goes by.
Yes, it's time to sit back, relax, and listen. And let your mind travel back through the sands of time to a better time. A time when the best radio in world history was right here in the United States of America. It's the period of golden radio. On Monday, March 19th, 1928, a radio program began that was destined to become America's favorite pastime because when it was on the radio from 7 to 7:15 p.m., no one else was listening to any other radio program except this one.
And now it's time for Amos and Andy. Amos and Andy, two lifelong buddies from Dixie, have spent most of their time on a farm just outside Atlanta, Georgia. Amos is a hard-working little fellow who tries to do everything he can to help others and to make himself progress, while his friend Andy is not especially fond of hard work and often has Amos assist him in his own duties. As the curtain goes up, we find the boys returning to the farmhouse with a bucket of milk. Both are enthusiastic about going to Chicago, where they have heard good, high-salary jobs are available. Here they are.
I was just sitting here dreaming about Chicago, and instead of putting the milk in the bucket, I put half of it on the ground.
That's what you get for not tending to your business, Amos. If I'd been milking that cow, son, I wouldn't have wasted a drop of milk.
When I tell Mr. Hopkins that I lost half the milk, he's going to get mad with me.
Let him get mad with you. You ain't got no business shooting the milk on the ground.
I gotta tell him, though, because if he knows I ought to have more milk than this.
Instead of paying attention to what you was doing, you was sitting there dreaming.
Yeah, if I hadn't been thinking about going to Chicago then, I'd have got the milk in the bucket all right.
Well, it's your own fault, that's all I gotta say.
You know, you was the one he told to milk the cow.
Yeah, that is right, ain't it?
He told you to milk the cow. He didn't tell me to do it. You is the one that's going to take the milk into him.
On second thought here, we better not tell him nothing about losing part of the milk, because I don't want him jumping all over me.
Well, what's you going to do about it? We ought to tell him that's the right thing to do.
Wait a minute here, son. I got an idea.
What you going to do now?
Come on over here with me. Hand me that bucket.
Where'd you going? What you going to do with it?
Here's the well right here. We'll fill that bucket up with water.
Wait a minute. You can't do that with the stuff. That's going to make Mr. Hopkins mad if he ever find that stuff.
Now, how's he going to find that out?
He's liable to find it out, though, Andy. We ain't got no business putting water in the milk.
Now, listen here, Amos. Don't never try and tell me what to do and what not to do. I know what I's doing.
I know, but if Mr. Hopkins ever see you doing that, he's liable to fire both of us.
Hold that bucket of milk there while I pour some water in it.
I don't want to get mixed up in this. I ain't going to do it. The man don't want no water in his milk.
Do what I tell you there, and don't give me no back talk. Hadn't been for me, we wouldn't have had this job in the first place.
Well, all right, then. I'll hold the bucket in, but I certainly do hate to put water in the man's milk.
Hold it still now.
I think you've got enough in there now, Andy.
Shut up now. I know what I was doing.
Wait a minute, yeah. You got too much water in there.
Yeah, that is a lot there. Wait a minute, yeah. Let it stay there, though. That ain't nothing.
I don't think that cow ever gave that much milk.
Yeah, grab a hold of that bucket there and carry it over there to the farmhouse.
Catch hold of it there and carry half of it, will you?
My hands are sore. You carry the stuff.
Well, what you going to do after you give them the milk? We have to go in the field and plow, ain't we?
After I give Mr. Hopkins this here milk, I's going to go out in the barn and take a nap. That's what I going to do.
First thing you know, both of us going to be fired.
Well, what do we care if we is fired? Then we can go to Chicago and get a big job.
I know, but we don't want to lose this one before we get another one, Andy.
Now, listen. Sometime when I feels like talking to you, I'll tell you how we both can go up to Chicago and make a lot of money.
The only thing is, I don't want to do, though. I don't want to give up one job before I get another one, that's all.
This job we got right now ain't no good. If we get up to Chicago, son, we can make some big money.
Well, how's we going to get there, though? That's the main thing.
We'll get there, all right. Just leave it to me. I figures them things out myself.
We can't go up there on no freight train, though, because we liable to get killed bumming our way up there or something. We can't do that.
Boy, when I leave this here country for Chicago, I's going first class. That's what I's going to do.
But I was thinking, though, we might take a couple of these mules they got down there. If they sell them cheap enough, drive them up there.
Amos, here's one man that ain't going to go out here on no mule. We wouldn't get there till we was 75 years old.
Well, here we is at the house. You going to give him the milk?
Hand me the bucket and then knock on the door.
Yeah, you is.
I hope this here man Hopkins ain't got no more work for me to do today. I is tired.
I is hungry, too. Wait a minute, y'all. Here he comes. All right, boys, you've got the milk, have you?
Yeah, you is, Mr. Hopkins.
Yeah, there it is, right there. This is a lot of milk for that cow to be given.
Well, I tell you, Mr. Hopkins, I's been taking good care of that cow, and when I milks him, I milks him.
All right, boys. Now I want you boys to go over there and fix that barbed wire fence just on the other side of the barn. A couple of those posts have fallen down.
All right, sir. We fix it.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hopkins. We take care of it. Come on, Andy.
Now, listen here. I has done enough work around this place today.
I know, but the man is paying us by the week, Andy. We got to do what he tells us to do.
Well, I ain't going to work my head off around here.
Well, we got to fix that fence. If we don't, we liable to get fired.
I done told you that we can go to Chicago and get a job. Come on, walk in the barn here with me.
What you going to do in the barn?
Don't ask so many questions. Just come on in here with me. Like I tell you.
Well, we got to hurry up and get out there, that fence, though.
Now, listen here, son. All we need is the railroad fare to Chicago, because they tells me that there are so many jobs open up there that they just can't get enough men to work.
Well, what kind of job is we going to get up there?
Well, you ain't got much sense. You can't do nothing. But, Let me see. I don't know what you can do, but I's got my job all picked out.
What is you going to do when you get there?
I's going to be a superintendent or something. I'm going to be kind of foreman of the job.
Well, what are you getting ready to do here now?
Come on over here in the corner with me now.
Well, what are you going to do here?
I's going to lay down here on this hay and take a little nap. That's what I'm going to do.
Mr. Hopkins done told us, though, to fix that fence of his. You can't stay here. Come out here and help me.
You go ahead and fix the fence. I'm going to take a little nap. That's what I'm going to do.
Now, suppose Mr. Hopkins come out there, though, and wants to know where you is.
If Mr. Hopkins comes out there and asks where I is, just tell him that one of the hogs get out the pen and I is looking for the hog.
All right, I'll tell him. I'm going out and go to work. I'll see you later.
Yeah, call me when the supper bell rings. Well, it looks like Amos isn't going to have any luck getting Andy to do any work. Is Andy going to do some work? Tune in next time for another chapter in the adventures of our favorite fellows, Amos and Andy.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. And now here's Mr. Franklin Delano Roosevelt once again.
Ladies and gentlemen, when I was President of the United States, I used to listen to a soap opera by the name of Cecil and Sally. I'd like to take you back on Uncle Ed's magnificent time machine to the time of 1928, before I became president, when Eleanor and I used to sit and listen to Cecil and Sally. And now, here is Cecil and Sally, my friends.
Did you read about me in the paper, Cecil? Did you see it? Did you?
Oh, you weren't in the papers.
I was so, too. It said, Sally Smith was elected president of a new girls' club which met at the home of her uncle, Mr. Thomas Smith. Did you say that?
Oh, where did it say that?
It said that on the page where it tells about club meetings.
I didn't get in the papers. A dinky little old club like they be today.
It is not a dinky club. We have high ideals. We help our fellow men and women and girls and boys. We do good deeds and we're not dinky.
Well, how did it get in the papers?
I phoned it in.
You did?
Yes. After you left last night and the election was over, I told the newspaper.
Did you mention that Flossie was elected vice president?
Yes, I did. In fact, I wrote it out before I phoned it. Took 7 pages. I said that I was the niece of my uncle and that I was elected president and treasurer and that Flossie manager and vice president. But they didn't use it all.
So wonder they used any.
Well, 2 lines is better than nothing.
How many fees did you collect last night?
Nearly $10. I'm pretty good, don't you think so?
Oh, I'll bet your club will bust up in a week.
It will not. We're going to grow and grow. Someday we might control this wonderful country that's the United States of America.
Hooray! Where's your flag?
And I'm going to start doing something to make us famous.
Don't include me. I'm glad it's a girls' club, so I won't be mixed up in it.
But even if boys aren't in it, you want to do good deeds, don't you?
Oh, maybe.
And Cecil, we're both going to start.
Aren't we?
We're going to help people who have less than we have.
I didn't know there were any. I have 50 cents.
Oh, Cecil, that's just grand.
What are you talking about?
Well, I'll take the 50 cents to put with the money the D-to-Day Club has.
You just think you will.
That's one of the things we're going to do. Get money for poor people.
Well, you're not getting my 50 cents. I'm poor enough.
Do you know that I felt just terrible today?
You look all right.
I could have just cried to think that it's happening in our neighborhood.
Would you please tell me the story straight?
I've been wondering what I could do to help, and now that I'm president of the D-to-Day, my way is clear.
Not very clear to me.
Cecil, you know that white house in the next block?
What about it?
Oh, there are some poor people living there.
What are poor people doing in this neighborhood?
A beautiful lady and her little boy live there.
They must have just moved in.
And she's sick in bed, maybe starving.
Haven't they got any money?
No, and they're proud. Isn't it sad?
Oh, it sure is tough, but how did you find out?
Oh, I find out everything around here.
Why don't they get somebody to help them?
Well, that's where the deed of day comes in.
Is the lady very sick?
Well, I don't know, but they haven't had any groceries for a week.
Maybe they're on a diet.
No, Cecil. I walked by the front of their house and the little boy was playing out in the yard.
Well, gee, that's too bad. Is the poor old kid really hungry?
Won't you help me do a good deed now, Cecil?
Sure, I'll help you, Sally. Did you talk to the little kid?
Yes. He came to the fence and asked me for a nickel.
What made him think you had a nickel?
Oh, he must have sensed that I was a deed of day girl. It was so pathetic.
Did you give him a nickel?
No, I didn't have one with me. Cecil, he was hungry.
Did he say so?
Yes. He told me that his mother was sick in bed and that they didn't have anything to eat.
Well, let's tell Mr. Smith or somebody.
Oh, no, Cecil. I'm so glad she's sick and hungry. It gives me a chance to do a good deed.
Yeah, but suppose they die and no one knows.
I'm going to use some of the deed of day money. I'm going to give that lady $5.
Do you think she'll get sorry if you butt in?
Well, you can go along with me to help me talk.
But can you use the club money for that?
Why, of course. I'm president and treasurer, and it's a good deed.
Well, I didn't say it wasn't.
Then on the other hand, as Mamie says, maybe they wouldn't take money.
Never seen anybody that wouldn't.
Maybe we could send them flowers. Flowers for thought, Cecil.
They can't eat flowers, unless they're sunflowers and they like sunflower seeds.
Well, I don't think we ought to take them food.
Give them the money. You want me to? I'll give it to her.
No, it's my good deed. Well, I'll give her $5 from the deed today.
Sure. The lady might need money for medicine.
Oh, Cecil, we can bring her some medicine, too. Uncle Thomas has a lot of old bottles of medicine upstairs.
Yeah, then she would be insulted.
Well, I'll put the $5 in an envelope.
You better get a receipt or something from the lady.
Why should I?
Well, what will you tell the Deed of Day Club when it meets next week?
I'll say I gave $5 to a starving mother.
Yeah, well, they might want to be asked first.
Well, that's what I'm president and treasurer for.
Okay, it's not any of my business.
Well, don't you think what I'm doing is noble?
Yes, all right.
Don't you wish you belonged to our club?
No, I don't.
But you'd like to do something, too, wouldn't you?
I'll go with you.
How would you like to do something for the poor little boy?
I'll give him a nickel.
Oh, Cecil, aren't you ashamed?
I'll let him keep it.
Here I am willing to give $5 and you offer a nickel. Shame on you.
Yeah, but you're not giving your own money.
Well, it's all the same, Cecil. It's all the same. Why don't you do something big, too?
For instance?
Well, why don't you give the lady's poor little boy a present?
Of what?
What have you got?
50 cents?
Oh, no, don't give him money. Give him something he would treasure.
You can treasure money.
I know, Cecil, your watch. Where is it?
Here it is. Why?
Why don't you give your watch away? Prove that boys are just as generous as girls.
Hey, I'm not going to give that little kid my watch. I like it.
Yes, but that would prove how noble you are.
Ha! I'd rather not be so noble and be able to tell the right time.
So you'd let us girls do everything. Well, it's just like a boy.
Yeah, but a watch is a watch.
But you said it only cost $1, though.
But it keeps good time.
All right. I didn't know you were selfish, Cecil. Poor, hungry little boy. I'm proud girls want to do good deeds. Hooray for the deed today.
All right. I'll give the little bum my watch then.
Oh, Cecil, you won't, will you?
I said I would.
Oh, you'll be rewarded in heaven, Cecil.
I won't need to know the time there.
You're setting a good example for me, Cecil. Now, I'll just go ahead and give away all the money the Deed of Day Club has.
Hey, wait a minute. Now, go easy. You're just getting started.
I'll bet Mrs. Guy Landis hears about us.
Who is she?
Haven't you heard of her?
No, what'd she do?
Well, she's the head of all the charities and things in this city. She's very rich and gives benefits and things.
Oh, I know about her. She always gets in the papers for collecting money.
Yes, well, wait till she hears about me and the girls that belong to my club.
Ha. Maybe she'll get interested and help you get famous, huh?
Oh, I feel so good. Ha. Don't you just love to help others, Cecil?
Well, I'd kind of like to keep my watch.
Shall we go over there right now?
Hey, won't she think we're just a couple of nosy brats or something?
Oh, no, Cecil. I'll tell her that I represent the D-Day and you're just my friend.
And then you'll give her the $5, huh?
Yes. Oh, isn't it just too beautiful, Cecil? I can just see her poor, weak, pale face when she sees the money. Tears will swell in her eyes and run down her pale, weak cheeks, and she'll most likely break down. Isn't it grand?
I'll give you the old watch, and you go by yourself.
Oh, no, Cecil, you've got to go with me.
Well, I hope the lady won't cry. Do you think she will?
Don't you feel good already about this, Cecil?
No. Well, goodbye, watch. You've been a swell pal.
Oh, don't you worry, Cecil. You won't miss us.
The heck I won't.
Well, let's go now, then. Huh. Is there a new light in my eyes, Cecil? I've never done anything like this before. Huh. I feel just like a crusader going out to conquer the world. Going out with my army to kill all the infidels and make people happy. Now I know just how Joan of Arc felt when she rode her white horse, or, was that Lady Godiva? Ha! Huh. Well, anyhow, I feel just grand.
Was Cecil and Sally. And that was the Roosevelts' favorite soap opera of 1928. Thank you for listening, and good evening, my friends.
And now we get in our time machine and we travel back in time to the year 1939. And we're going to listen to Mr. John Wayne as he introduces the Lone Ranger. John? Well, thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here. And this is the first time that I can talk about my experience with the Lone Ranger. He and I were operators out in the far west for a long period of time when the west was wild. Very few people know that, and this is the first time that I'm revealing this secret. And one of the very first times I met him was when this program was first put on the air. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my good friend, the Lone Ranger.
Horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo, Silver, the Lone Ranger. Phantom figure of the plains rode the trails of long ago to bring justice to the oppressed. Where he came from, no one ever knew. But his heroic deeds were recorded in the memories of the people of seven states. Even today, the cowboys sit around the campfire and relate yarns of his daring, of his speed on the draw when he meted out punishment to the lawless, of his great horse Silver, the fastest the West has ever known. History does not record as many adventures, but the West will always remember the shout which has come down through the years.
Hi-yo, Silver!
The Lone Ranger rides again.
Come on, Silver, old boy! Let's go! sail ahead. We have to hurry, old boy, or we may be too late. I'll sail.
The Lone Ranger urged the Great Horse Silver down the trail toward Wells City, a typical rancher's community of the pioneer days. Ben Bush was the wealthiest man in town. He owned the bank, controlled vast sections of rangeland in the territory, received dividends from most of the other commercial enterprises. But for all his wealth and power, he was thoroughly disliked. He ruled Wells City and the surrounding district with an iron hand. And it was suspected, though never proved, that he had built his position upon a disregard of honesty and justice. It was certain that the sheriff of the county, Pete Crowley, obeyed his commands without question, and the lawman's reputation had suffered in consequence. In the first scene of tonight's Lone Ranger drama, we see Ben Bush speaking with Crowley in the cafe. They are seated in one corner of the large room and are careful that they're not overheard by the rest of the crowd.
I tell you, I done all I could. It ain't my fault them two was rescued.
I don't like alibis.
But there ain't a man alive can do more than I done.
You ain't done good enough, Crowley. That's the point.
But I can't...
Just remember, I'm the man put you in office.
Well, I ain't forgot that.
I'm the man can get you out of office.
I know, Mr. Bush, but what more can I do than what I do?
The job of sheriff means arresting crooks and guarding them, don't it?
Sure, that's what I done. That's what I've been doing all along.
I ain't asked you to give evidence against them. I've done that myself.
They've gone
to trial and been found guilty.
Yeah?
But twice, when they was all set to get hung, they was rescued by some masked man on a white horse.
But he rides like lightning. The way he handles them two guns of his, a man hasn't a chance to...
I don't like alibis. I told you that before, Crowley.
I ain't alibying, Mr. Bush. You know as well as I do, that white horse is a devil on four legs.
The rider ain't.
He had us all covered with them six guns of his before we could say Jack Robinson.
Then you should get some deputies that's quicker on the draw. I tell you, Crowley, I don't like the way things is going here. Who is that masked man anyhow?
I don't know.
Like as not, he's an outlaw.
Sure, wearing a mask like he does, he must be.
Then why don't you arrest him? Get him tried and hung.
But you can't find him. I've had men out hunting.
Ah.
It's the truth. I've had parties out ever since Lem Frisbee was saved from the hangman's rope.
Ain't even found tracks, have you?
No, but we still got men out.
Rot. First thing you know, my enemies will get teamed up against me. Then now they're all through in this town.
I know.
Maybe that's what you're figuring on.
No, Mr. Bush. You know that ain't the case.
I don't trust anyone, Crowley. Maybe that's why I got where I am.
Well, you can trust me. Ain't I done what you asked me to ever since I got in office?
You let two of my enemies escape. Like as not, the one that's in jail now will be rescued by that masked man before he's hung.
You won't. You can bet on that. We got guards at the jail night and day.
Reckon we better go down there and make sure he's still locked up.
Shucks, he'll be there. Neither of the others was took till he was ready to hang. Larson ain't even come up for trial yet.
We're gonna take a look anyhow. Come on.
Well, if you want to. It ain't no use. If you take my word for it, you're still there.
I'm beginning to think your word don't amount to much.
I wish you'd put more trust in me, Mr. Bush.
Just a couple more escapes in this town, and you're going to be out in the office, Crowley. Mind what I tell you.
Well, come on. Let's go to the jail. All right, Fred. I don't know who that masked man is and what he's doing around here.
So do I.
He must be an enemy of yours, Mr. Bush.
My enemies hang. You know that. Except when you get careless.
I reckon we can leave the horses here at the hitch rack. It ain't far down to the jail.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Bush, I've been thinking.
Well?
You're sort of dissatisfied with the way I've been doing my job.
Why shouldn't I be? Two men I figured to get rid of by this time are out free somewhere.
Well, you ain't the only one that ain't satisfied with things as they stand.
Well, what do you mean?
I've been thinking I ought to get more money.
More money?
Yep. If you had an honest sheriff in here, you wouldn't stand a chance of getting away with the things you've been doing.
Yeah? Well, get this, Crowley. Anytime you get tired working for me, or anytime I get tired of the way you do your job, There's a jail cell waiting to hold you.
You mean...
I mean I got evidence to put you in jail, same as I got it against my other enemies.
Hey, look over by the jail.
A white horse. If that's the same man...
Hurry up, Larson, this way.
Use your gun, drop him. Get the two of them. They're getting to the saddle.
I never figured he'd try and get Larson away before his trial.
Three of my enemies out loose and all saved by the same man, Crowley. I'm beginning to think you're scheming things again, then.
In spite of the efforts of Bush and Crowley, the Lone Ranger had effected the rescue of each of the three men framed by the pair. After his last exploit, the masked man returned to his camp with Steve Larson, the third of the rescued prisoners.
Hold on. This is Steve Larson. I just helped him to escape from jail.
Oh, that. Good.
I don't savvy this at all. Who are you?
I hope to be your friend, Larson.
What'd you bust me out of the jail for?
So you wouldn't be tried and hung for murder.
But they didn't have no evidence against me.
They didn't have evidence against the other two men, but both of them were ready to hang.
You're the man that rescued them?
Yes, Tonto and I.
Where are they now?
They're safe for the time being.
Just what are you up to, mister? What's the mask for?
I brought you here to ask questions of you, not to answer yours.
I suppose I should be doggone grateful to you. But I ain't.
I'm not asking for your gratitude.
If I got tried and freed, I'd been all right. But as it stands now, I'm an outlaw.
Yes.
My wife is here in town. So's my kid. I can't never go back to see them. My busting out of the jail is the same as confessing my guilt.
You were accused of murder.
Yeah, but I could have proved my innocence.
How?
The night Sam Turner was killed, I was at home with Mary and little Jerry.
That wouldn't clear you, Larson. Remember, Ben Bush is against you.
That scheming polecat. Someday he's going to get all that's coming to him.
That's what I'm working for.
You know about him?
Not all that I want to know. You tell me about him.
He's got so much money, he does whatever he darn pleases.
I've been told that. You had money in his bank, didn't you?
All my savings. About $3,000.
That's just the point.
Huh?
Frisbee and Slade had their money in his bank. That's why they were framed for murder.
See here, do you mean to say they weren't guilty of murders?
No.
But the evidence, what? Four men seen them do the shooting.
Those four men were paid to tell the jury that story.
By Bush?
Yes.
What's his game?
Larson, Bush takes the money people put in his bank.
Steals it?
Yes. Then before the money can be claimed, he arranges for the owner to get into trouble. And Sheriff Crowley works hand in glove with him.
See, do you mean to tell me I'd have faced what Frisbee and Slade did?
Yes.
That there'd have been men on the stand that swear they seen me shoot a man?
That's just what would have happened.
Why, that ornery...
You called Bush a schemer and a polecat. What do you know about him?
I know he never gives a man a chance to pay up a mortgage if he has a little late on
him. Yes.
He swindles and cheats wherever he can. I always thought he stuck to the letter of the law.
No, he doesn't even do that.
What am I to do now?
I want you to help me.
How?
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Slade and Frisbee.
Yeah?
Will you stake your freedom on a chance that you might hang rather than spend the rest of your life as an outlaw?
I don't savvy.
As you stand right now, you're safely away from the jail. You can leave my camp and go where you want to. But you'll always be hunted by the law for a crime you didn't do.
I savvy that.
If you'll help me and risk being captured, there's a chance to put Ben Bush and Sheriff Crowley where they belong. And then you can return to town a free man.
Life wouldn't mean much to me, away from my wife and kid.
Then I can count on you?
Yes. I suppose Frisbee and Slade decided different, being as they ain't around here. But I'll go in with you.
They've made the same choice.
Yeah? Gosh, and the four of us are working together?
There are five of us, counting my friend Tonto.
Oh, yeah.
Larson, from now on, don't ask questions. Just do what you're told and count on us.
I never thought I'd trust a man that wore a mask, stranger. But there's something about your style that makes me like you and trust you. I'm taking your orders from now on.
The Lone Ranger had a definite purpose in mind when he freed the three men Crowley had imprisoned. In the meantime, the sheriff and his posse scoured the country in search of the masked man and his companions, but without success. The hunt continued for several days. Bush became incensed over the delay. At length, the banker approached Crowley in the cafe and spoke heatedly.
I could really make a clean-up if I could count on you at all. Well, I can't.
Mr. Bush, I'm doing all a man can do.
Ain't found one of the four men.
Three.
Four, including the masked man, to save the others, or ain't you bothering to hunt him?
Yeah, sure we are.
A stranger drifted into town today and opened a big account at the bank.
Yeah?
If only I could count on you.
The next one won't get away from me, I promise you that.
There won't be a next one for some time. It takes a while for me to line things up.
Hey, Sheriff, come fast. There's been a shooting down the road a piece.
A shooting?
Come on, quick. Maybe you can get the hombre.
Did you see anything of the man that done the shooting?
Well, is the man still there? He's examining the redskin he shot. He's that stranger in town.
Not in Markheim.
Reckon that's what he calls himself.
Come on, Sheriff. Here's a chance to do something.
I'm on my way.
Never
mind. I'll see you later.
You won't need your horse. It's just a few rods away. Listen to me, Sheriff.
I'm listening.
Don't run so fast. I can't keep up
with you. Well, I gotta get there. It's a murder.
If that man's name is Markheim, he's the one put a lot of money in the bank, see?
Well, what about it?
Here's your chance to make good on one thing for me.
What is it?
See that Markheim gets arrested and hung.
He'll get arrested and hung, all right. If he's guilty.
Never mind whether he's guilty or not. Make him guilty.
You mean?
I mean we can frame him same as we did them others. What's more, we've got a real murder to start with.
You're coming, Sheriff. Can't you come no faster than that?
I'm with you.
He's still there. Standing looking over the redskin he shot.
I can see that the Indian's got your cash on him, huh? Hey, you! Don't make a move! You're under arrest!
I'm not going to run away.
You're covered.
Markheim, it's you.
Sure, it's me. Oh, you're Mr. Bush, ain't you?
I am, and this here is Sheriff Crowley.
Sheriff, I don't know who done this shooting, but...
What do you mean you don't know who done it?
You done it.
You're wrong there, Mr. Bush. I didn't have no part in it.
Don't give us none of that. You're guilty. Who else would shoot an Indian?
We ain't sure about it, Sheriff. We just heard the shot and run up.
I did the same thing. I heard the shooting, ran over, and the Indian was there on the ground.
I told this hombre to sort of stand around and watch, and I'd go fetch you, Sheriff.
He's the one killed the Indian, all right. Take his gun.
Hold on, Sheriff. Ain't you being a little hasty?
No, I ain't. It's my duty to warn you. Anything you say can be used against you.
Yeah, I'll search him, Sheriff.
That ain't exactly right, Mr. Bush. I'm the one...
I said I'd search him.
Oh, all right, then. All right.
Just what's the meaning of all this, Sheriff? What right's Bush to search me? He ain't a lawman, is he?
None of your talk now.
You don't seem to have much money on you.
You know blame well where all my money is, Bush. I put it in your bank today.
You did?
Well, you know blame well I did.
I don't know nothing of the sort.
Hold on there. That's my receipt for the money you got.
This ain't nothing but a scrap of paper. You must be loco, Mr. Markheim.
Loco?
That's what I said. I don't recollect you putting any money in my bank.
Of all the dirty lying coyotes. What sort of game is this?
Take him to jail, Sheriff. He's a murderer, all right.
You can't do this.
Come on, Markheim.
That banker's saying I ain't no money in this bank. I'm innocent. You can't call me guilty. I'm as innocent as you are, Sheriff. You can't take me to jail.
You ain't only going to jail. You're going to the hangman's noose. We got evidence enough to send you there.
The curtain falls on the first act of our Lone Ranger drama. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments. Now, on with our story. You will recall that in the first act of tonight's Lone Ranger drama, the banker and the sheriff of Wells City frame three men for murder, only to have them taken from jail by the masked man. The accused men were large depositors in the bank owned by Bush, who intended to steal their funds. The Lone Ranger, however, had freed the convicted men as part of a plan to bring Bush and Crowley to justice. Then a fourth man entered the story. His name was Markheim. And he was discovered standing over an Indian he was accused of killing. That same afternoon, Markheim had placed a large sum of money in the bank. Bush saw another opportunity to frame an important depositor.
Hold on now, Sheriff. Can't you listen to me for just a minute or so?
Oh, talk fair, son.
What is it? You ain't even looked to make sure the Redskin's dead before you jail me for murder.
We'll do the looking later. We don't take chances with murderers like you.
Then make that banker give me back the paper he took from me.
It wasn't nothing but a scrap of paper. I throwed it away.
It's a receipt for the cash I banked in your place today, Bush. I suppose now you'll claim I ain't no money there and keep it for yourself.
Take him in, Sheriff.
Yep. Come on, Markheim.
What the Redskin?
I'll go back and see if he's dead for sure.
No, you won't.
What the?
The masked man again. You'll all stand right where you are.
Charlie, if he gets this prisoner away from you, I'll haggle it out in town on the rail.
I'm not after your prisoner. I'm here to take the Indian away with me.
See here, you. You're under arrest.
Big talk from a man who doesn't dare reach for his gun.
Shoot him, Crowley. Don't stand there like a sniveling coward. Draw and shoot.
Don't fight. I'm still holding one gun on you.
Now's your chance while he's trying to heist the Redskin on his horse.
Go ahead if you think you can complete your draw.
He's grease-lighting with a gun, Mr. Bush.
I'll still
Now's your chance. Shoot. Shoot him.
I'll try.
Give him, Crowley. Wait. No, try again. He's still riding.
Tain't no use, Bush.
No.
He's out of sight in the dark. That horse he's riding's grease lightning.
What did he want the dead Injun for?
Don't ask me.
Well, see that you don't let the prisoner get away, blasted old Crowley. Don't let him get away.
The Lone Ranger made no attempt to rescue the sheriff's latest prisoner. Instead, he and Tonto rode swiftly to their camp. There they were met by the three fugitives who had agreed to assist in carrying out his plan.
Here we are, Tonto.
How did it come out?
What happened, mister?
What did you do?
Everything worked out just as we hoped. They didn't even examine Tonto to see if he'd been shot or not.
Can you beat that? It's just like I said. The sheriff's a crook and so is Bush.
Not only that, they made sure to get the bank deposit slip away from Markheim.
Bush done that, didn't he?
Yes, and the sheriff permitted it.
That means Markheim will be slated to hang, and he won't have a chance of getting away.
Not unless the masked man gets him away like he done us.
We're going to let Markheim go on trial. And when that trial comes up, the sheriff and Ben Bush will have a surprise.
Ranger had proved the dishonesty of the sheriff and the banker beyond all possibility of doubt. In the meantime, Markheim was put on trial. A jury was hastily summoned, and the evidence of a series of lying witnesses presented to the court.
Then Markheim drawed his gun and fired. The Redskin dropped dead. That's all I got to say, Judge.
That man lies, Judge.
You're out of order, Markheim. Be quiet.
But my gun wasn't even fired. The sheriff can tell you that.
How about that, Sheriff?
Might have been fired and might not have been. I dumped the cartridges out without looking to see.
You're railroading me to the hangman's rope. That's what you're doing.
One after another, the witnesses swore to the same story. Markheim, they said, had killed the Indian. But outside the courthouse, a group of men led by the Lone Ranger watched the progress of the trial with keen interest. We hear the masked man as he addresses one of his companions.
Frisbee.
Yeah?
Are those witnesses the same ones who testified against you?
Yes, they are.
They had plenty to say against me, too.
The same men?
Yeah.
The dirty rats. They're all being paid for that by Ben Bush.
Just wait.
I'd like to get in there and have my say.
Not yet.
Look, the jury's going out now.
Markheim hasn't had his full say yet. Wait until the jury comes in.
But strange. What's Markheim going to do?
Wait and watch.
Thank you.
friend of only hangs.
Shucks, I wouldn't bet one to a thousand he don't. He didn't get a square trial. Not even a man to speak for him.
Ain't no one gets a square trial in this town.
The sheriff himself is the biggest crook of all.
Don't let yourself get here saying that.
There's a jury coming back.
That jury is a hanging one. Let's have it quiet here. Order in the court. Sheriff Crowley, you're acting as clerk. Go on and tend to business.
Gents of the jury, have you reached a verdict? Well, let one of you stand up and tell it to the judge.
We find the prisoner guilty of murder.
Markham, you'd better stand up and face me so as I can sentence you.
I'll stand here. First of all, before you sentence me, Judge, I've got something to say.
Well, make it short.
In the first place, I'm charged of murdering a man that's not even proved to be dead. In the second place, not one of those witnesses saw the shooting. In the third place, my gun was not fired. And in the fourth place, before I'm through, you're all going to be sorry you had so much to say.
What's the meaning of such talk? You're found guilty.
And I'm not. Judge, there's plenty of crooks in this town. Maybe you're one of them, maybe you ain't. We'll find that out before another 10 minutes goes by.
What?
Right now, friends of mine are coming into this courtroom.
Keep everyone covered, boys.
Oh, no one make a move.
The masked man.
There's T. Larson, one of the escaped prisoners.
Order! Order in this court!
You're under arrest.
No one is under arrest just yet. Slade, Frisbee, bring in the Indian.
We're coming.
All of you, be quiet.
There's the other two fugitives.
Order in this court. You can't run things in this high-handed way, even if you are holding two guns on us.
Careful there, Judge. We're covering everyone.
All right, Markheim, take charge. Get this place quiet so I can talk.
Quiet! Quiet, I tell you!
That's better. For the time being, Sheriff, you can't arrest those fugitives because they've got you and all your men covered.
All right, Markheim. But you said the body of the man you shot wasn't on hand. Or what do you call the engine Frisbee and Slade brought in?
I'd like to ask the witnesses if that's the man I'm said to have shot.
Yes, it is.
Do you agree with that, Banker Bush?
Yeah.
What about you, Sheriff?
It's him.
Then, Judge, I'm not a murderer. Stand up, Tuttle.
Me not shot. Me not hurt.
It's a double-crossing frame-up. That's what it is.
Wait, I ain't done yet.
Quiet in this room. Maybe that ain't the man you shot, Markheim.
I didn't shoot anyone. Judge, the two men who just came in, Frisbee and Slade, were tried and found guilty in your court.
Yes, that's right.
And the witnesses against them was the same ones that appeared against me. Ain't that so, boys?
Sure is.
And the reason was, Bush stole the money they had in his bank. Then, with the help of the sheriff and lying witnesses, he framed them for murder.
That ain't so. Tain't so, I tell you.
Markheim lies.
Quiet, Sheriff.
You make a more noise. Me stopping you.
Get away from me, Redskin.
Let me ask you this, Banker Bush. Did I put cash in your bank?
No, you did not.
You heard that, Judge?
Yeah, I heard it.
Bush, you think you're safe in denying I put cash in your bank because you thought you got the slip of paper that would prove it. Well, all you got was a copy of that same. Here, Judge, is a paper with Ben Bush's signature on it.
By consideration, Markheim got it.
What about it, Judge? Is Markheim right?
He seems to be. But never in my life have I seen anything like
it. I ain't done yet, Judge. The masked man fired a shot, and I stayed where Tonto lay on the ground, waiting to see if I'd be framed. All them witnesses that said they seen the murder lied. Steve, you were watching Abe Gorman when the shot was fired. Where was he?
Gorman was gambling in the cafe.
Bless you.
Slade, you were watching Lehman and Snyder when the shot was fired.
Yeah, and they was calling on the widow Perkins.
Mrs. Perkins will prove that.
See here, Judge.
Wait!
Let me speak, Markheim.
Yes, Your Honor.
You wondered if I was on the level. Well, you'll find out.
Yeah?
All it takes is a look at the faces of them lying witnesses to know the truth. Every one of them should be jailed for swearing away a man's life.
But, Judge,
that's for you, sir. And you, Bush. It looks like the murders Frisbee, Slade, and Larson have been charged with are still unsolved. And it looks like it's up to me to appoint a deputy sheriff to arrest you for investigation.
One minute, Judge.
Yeah?
You needn't appoint anyone. The United States Marshal is here to take charge of things.
He is? Where's he at?
You know him as Markheim.
He come here to frame up the bunch of us.
I came here at the suggestion of the Lone Ranger. He and Tonto outlined a plan where I'd be bait for the trap to show the sheriff and his deputies up as scheming crooks.
But where's the Lone... Great guns. You mean that masked man is the Lone Ranger?
That's about the size of it.
Come, Tonto, we're finished here.
Wait a minute, Lone Ranger. This town owes you a plenty. Stop him. I want to speak to him. It's due to him that this community will be safe for honest men.
You have just heard is a copyrighted feature of the Lone Ranger Incorporated.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Ed Bolton singing a Vaughn Monroe hit of 1946, There I've Said It Again.
Praise that would sum up all that I feel for you. But what good are praises and thoughts that amaze us? If you love me and it's heavenly, forgive me for wanting you so. But one thing. I love you, since heaven knows when. There I said it again.
one thing.
That was Ed Bolton, vocalist for Wayne King and the Orchestra, singing a Vaughn Monroe favorite of 1946, There I've Said It Again. And this brings us to the close of another edition of Uncle Ed's Magnificent Time Machine. We hope you've enjoyed what we've presented, and we hope that you'll tune in once again for another edition of Uncle Ed's Magnificent Time Machine, taking us back through the sands of time to a better time, a time when America's radio was golden radio. This is Ed Bolton speaking.
You must remember this, a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings as time goes by.